You cannot change somebody else.
How dare you?
How much for his?
Enough!
But you can change yourself if you want to. We always start with you. If you want to develop excellent social skills or people skills, if you like, you have to have self-awareness. People are interesting. Most people are curious about why we do it the way we do it and how people are wired. Maybe the human brain is the most complicated organ on the planet. Men have a higher proclivity for violence than women have. Men are a little bit more task-oriented. Women are a little bit more relation-oriented. It's about when the frontal lobe closes. What that means cognitively is that now you can make decisions and understand the consequences. That happens at the age of 23, 24 when it comes to young men. It happens around 18, 19 when it comes to young women.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Loaf Podcast, where we break bread with the world's finest. Today we're here with Thomas Erickson, behaviorist and author of international bestseller, Surrounded by Idiots. Thomas, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thanks for the invitation. Oh, I'm really good. It's midsummer and, slowly getting back to work and a lot of exciting projects going on. So I feel really good. I feel excellent.
Well, I'm glad you're getting back to work so we're not piercing in the middle of your holidays. And since we're doing that, let's get straight into it. So from what I understand, the unique basis of your theory is the idea that humans roughly, although people do fit into different types, can be divided into four different types, which you call the colors. Can you explain the different colors for us? What kind of personalities they entail and why we're made this way and how these different colors interact? Just a very simple whistle stop tour, if that's okay, of the basis of the theory.
Okay. You got me there. I could talk about this for hours, obviously. Well, it's not my theory. It's the old disc profile, just reinvented using four colors for a pedagogical reason. It's easy to remember red and yellow behavior instead of a high D over an I with a low C, or an ENTJ personality. Sorry, INT, ITP, K, I, red and yellow. There you go. It's about extroversion versus introversion, task orientation versus people orientation. So you get a 2x2 matrix. So you get four basic fundamental behavioral types, let's say. And before anyone says, oh, there's got to be more than four types of people, of course there are. You can combine them in many, many ways, thousands of ways. And we all have the capacity for all the colors within us at the same time. However, we usually are more, we have a proclivity for using maybe one or maybe two colors that comes natural for us. Let's say that you are red and yellow as an example. That means that you're an extrovert. You like speed. You like fast-paced projects. You like action. You get the energy from outside. Doesn't mean you can't read Excel sheets or be friendly with people or be a good listener, which would be more of the blue and green type. But it comes natural for you to act in an extrovert way. And you asked why we are the way we are. That's a huge issue which is not described within any of these kind of profiles. Then you have to go back to different kinds of human science, I guess. It's the old question about nature versus nurture. Why did we become the way we are? Why are two twins so different personality-wise? Why is that? They have basically the same DNA. They have the same parents. They are born and raised at the same time, but they are not raised the same way because one of them came first. And he or she will be treated that way. This is usually subconsciously from the parents. They don't know this. They just treat people different, treat the siblings different. And your friends and your upbringing, the first years in school and your first job and so on, when you get to get this more fixed personality type, you change, I would say, your personality up until, mid-20s something, I would say. So, but I'm talking about behaviors here. The reason why you act the way you do, that's more connected to your drivers or your motivators. Why do you choose a certain behavior in a certain situation? Which is very interesting, of course, because, people are different. And sometimes you have to ask yourself, why did he do it exactly like that? I wouldn't have done like that, you know. Sometimes you feel you're surrounded by idiots.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the theme of your series, is surrounded by idiots, surrounded by vampires, surrounded by narcissists. So the idea sort of is, so far as I understand, that these different personality types mean that often we can come up and clash against each other. So one of the big themes in your book, or running themes, is how understanding these personality types and learning about them can help us to communicate each other. So could you maybe begin with some tips for communicating with different personality types, and how we can broach, for example, an introvert to extrovert, or task orientation to people orientation? And what are the kind of practical steps we can begin to take once we understand the theory?
Excellent question, of course. Requires also quite a long answer, because there's more than one question in there, isn't it? The thing is this, the biggest, sometimes it's kind of almost a canyon between some people. And the biggest problem, the biggest challenge, let's say, is usually between introverts and extroverts, because they are prone to certain kind of energies, really. When you talk about task orientation versus which is the red and blue behavior types, or people orientation, which is the yellow and green behavioral types, it's easier to sort of connect these two. But when it comes to introversion versus extroversion, it is kind of tricky. Not saying it's impossible, and it's kind of a floating scale. We are all sort of ambiverts, I guess. We're usually not very extreme on one side or completely tilted to the other side, but we have a certain way that comes naturally. And if you are an introvert, you will struggle to understand the extroverts. Why are they talking all the time? Why can't that guy be quiet? Why does she have to be in the center of things all the time? She's not interesting, you know. Why can't they read a manual? I mean, an instruction manual, you have to read the manual. But the extroverts say, hey, let's trial and error and see what happens. What could possibly go wrong? The only way to sort of overbridge these gaps between these types is probably to learn who you are yourself. I usually recommend self-awareness. If you want to develop excellent social skills or people skills, if you like, you have to have self-awareness. You need to know where you come from. If you meet a green person, should you lower your pace, or should you use a higher pace? Well, it depends on who you are. If you're blue, you need to speed up. But if you're red, you need to slow down. So it all depends on the starting point, actually. Any kind of program related to be an excellent communicator, we always start with you. You need to build your self-awareness. The interesting fact about self-awareness is it's kind of a rare thing, actually. It works like with, let's say, with humor. Everybody thinks they have it. You and I, we know. Some people don't have any humor, right? They just think they are funny, but they're not. Yeah. Same thing with self-awareness. Some people just, they don't get it. There was an interesting study, a meta study made by an American psychiatrist, I think she is, or psychologist. Correct me if I'm wrong there, one or the other, Tasha Urish. She studied 3,000 studies on self-awareness and found out that 95% of the population consider themselves above average when it comes to self-awareness, which is kind of interesting. It's like asking guys, are you a good driver? We're all above average, aren't we?
Yeah. No, just on that point, it's interesting, especially the humor point. I feel like Ollie, my co-host here, is one of those guys who constantly thinks he's really funny, but in actuality he's maybe not so funny. But anyway, I've got your book here, Surrounded by Idiots, which I actually found at the airport 2 days ago. Hit book. I see it everywhere on the bookshelves, so congrats there, first of all. Just to maybe come back for those listeners who aren't so familiar with the color types, could you just maybe quickly give us a recap of what red, yellow, green, and blue translate to, just as an overview, so that for the rest of the interview, if you refer to those colors, it's a little bit clear what you're referring to.
Absolutely. The red type is the extrovert, task-oriented person, dominant, fast-forward thinker, very fast-paced, some people consider them a bit aggressive, but they have a really strong drive, let's say, very impatient. They don't like details. They just want to push the accelerator all the time. very straightforward, very, very keen on straightforward language also. They never hide what they think. If you ask what they think about a certain topic, they will tell you. The other extroverted profile is the yellow one. They are extroverted, but people-oriented, which means these are the smiley ones, the happy ones, the social ones, because some people confuse extroversion with socializing people. That's not the same thing, but the yellows are the social types. They are, you know, mingling and they are, you know, they know everybody. They talk to everybody. They smile all the time when the sun is shining, even though it's raining. They will say, yeah, yeah, but you know, the sun is always shining somewhere. You have to stay on the positive side. That's the yellow type. Very, very, very impulsive, but also very inspiring, very creative. You know, thinking outside the box. You must be kidding. So there is a box. How do I get in the box? That's their kind of challenge. And then you have the other relation-oriented person, which is the green ones. But they are also introvert. So they are very friendly, very calm, very caring, sharing, good listeners. They actually hear what you say. They don't like conflicts. They are not very keen on changes, especially fast changes. They don't like that. But they are very loyal, very, very good team workers, team players. They are here for the team. And the last factor is the blue factor, which is task-oriented and introvert. And here you have yourself, let's say, an accountant or an engineer, you know, very precise, very exact, to the point, facts, details, proof. How do you know that? Which book do you read? What about the author? What kind of education does he have? You know, all those questions, ask questions all the time. But you can't accuse them of, you know, being sloppy or not considered about the deal, because quality is everything. So they pay attention to all the tiny nitty-gritty. So they can be a bit slow sometimes, but very, very precise. And again, as I mentioned before, we all have the capacity of all the colors within us. But usually, statistically speaking, two colors are usually what is the most common. And it could be any combination. It could be yellow and green or blue or whatever. So you have mostly two of them in you. There are people with mostly one color. 5% of the population, statistically speaking, shows usually one color. So we have them, but that's not very usual. So that's the foundation.
What I immediately notice when you talk about these things is that I often form mental pictures of such people in my head, or maybe characters of them. For example, Ollie, I can immediately realize that he's not a blue. And I think that's part of what makes it so entertaining. And on that note, it leads me to the question why you think your books have been such a hit, you know, bestseller in Sweden and all around the world. Why do you think it's so appealing to people?
If I had a recipe, I would write another book and do the same thing all over again. No, but seriously, I think it's about, firstly, it's about the topic in itself. Humans are interesting, right? People are interesting. Most people are curious about why we do it the way we do it and how people are wired. And usually it's interesting to read about yourself. Most people are I read somewhere 80% of all our thoughts is about ourselves. And let's say that's true. You can learn about you when reading this book, and that's something that people like. But I have also, of course, I have sort of wrapped it in something that is quite easygoing. I dare to use some humor, some irony, and people tend to find that entertaining. I think basically it's about explaining something quite complicated in an easy way. I usually argue you don't have to have 5 years psychology studies to understand human behavior. It doesn't hurt you if you had 5 years psychology studies, but you don't need those to understand daily behaviors and to understand yourself and to understand, you know, your closest neighbor or your spouse or your parents or anything. If you're interested, you can read a lot of books, and of course the title helps a little bit. It's some people consider it catchy. Some people say that's
very catchy,
kind of rude to you know. say that people are idiots, but we're all the idiots in somebody's story.
It was a bit funny because I was at the airport with the book, and I put it next to me, and the person next to me looked over and just saw my book, you know, surrounded by idiots. I mean, what must they have thought that I thought of them?
Yes, I've seen interesting clips on social media wandering around, you know, 25, 30 million views because people are sitting in a restaurant reading the book. That's kind of funny. I like that. I'm happy.
Do you want to frolic freely at the beach, hairless both upstairs and downstairs? Tired of being left bloody, stumbling and alone because of a bad razor? Then you know what to do. Get yourself a Manscaped. With the new Beard and Balls bundle, you can stay fresh all over. Use the discount code LOW for 20% off now.
Well, obviously, you know, you begin the book saying, actually, people aren't really so much idiots. It's actually just different communication styles or different ways of looking at the world, different ways of being task-oriented. And so you're very careful not to kind of put a value judgment on any one kind of way of communicating or any one kind of way of looking at things. But isn't it true to a certain extent that there can be superior ways of doing things, for example? For example, the fact that Blue is very careful and considered is a positive. And the fact that another person might be able to have some efficiency is a positive. So could you expand on your view of this a bit? Is this just to kind of not insult your readers, or is this kind of a more general philosophical view of personality, you know?
Am I trying to balance on a sharp edge here? I mean, diversity is a good thing when it comes to putting teams together. If everybody's the same way in a team, you're going to get a lot of people, you know, patting each other on the shoulder saying, oh, you're so right, I totally agree with you. But it's not going to be very interesting, right? And you can't solve complicated problems with the same way of thinking about this or that. So you need to have a spread when it comes to personalities and drivers and a lot of things, actually. But when it comes to calling people idiots, I mean, everybody recognizes the situation where you sit around the table, you have a discussion, there's something going on, you try to follow the agenda, you take good notes, and you run your arguments through everybody, and you see they're shaking their heads, you know, and when you leave the meeting, the only thing they can think of is, what's wrong with these people? What's going on here? What seems to be the problem here? And they think the same about you. But usually it is about communication. I mean, you can look at behaviors as a gearbox. Sometimes second gear is perfect, you know, when you're sort of going really slow downtown or something. But you can't use it on the motorway. You can't go 100 kilometers an hour on second gear. You need a fifth gear or sixth gear, or how many gears are there? I'm not big on cars. But, you know, but you need the whole, you need the whole toolbox, but you can't use all the tools. You can't use a hammer all the time in any situation. But some people actually do that. If you only have a hammer, all problems going to look like a nail. And that's not a good solution. Therefore, I would urge people to use more imagination. I mean, if I tell people, you know, people are different, you realize that. Yeah, I know. But, you know, but I'm right and they're wrong, and that's the end of that. You need to use your imagination. You need to have a broader perspective. And intellectually, everybody knows this. But at the heat of the moment, I don't have time to analyze everyone in the room. I just do whatever I usually do. And that's why you end up in a conflict. Because when you end up in a conflict, it could be about bad routines. It could be about a stupid agenda. But I would say 90% is about bad communication. People just don't pay attention. But then again, the question that you have there, Ollie, is all behaviors good all the time? No, of course not. Very unpopular opinion, but no. If you are looking for an engineer, if you are looking for an accountant, if you are looking for someone to figure out how to reach Mars, you need blue behavior. You need someone who can work on the problem for 10 years. If you need someone to you know, build new relationships, to entertain people, it's good if they have some yellow in them. Doesn't necessarily have to be all yellow, but if you have that factor that comes natural for someone, it's going to be very helpful. If you need someone to take very unpopular decisions and make themselves, let's say, well, not caring about people's opinions about them, red behavior will help. That's why you have a lot of, the higher up in any hierarchy you reach, the more red you will see, because they have sharper elbows. Are there better leaders? Sometimes they are, sometimes they are not. But you can't use all the same behavior in every situation. When I was really young, I don't know, 12 or 15 or something, somewhere there, I wanted to be a basketball player. I couldn't cope because I was too short. Then I wanted to be a Formula One driver. Too tall. Didn't fit into the cab. Life has treated me very unfairly. So I had to find an occupation where my height didn't matter. So I write books, and give lectures, keynotes and so on. So I travel the world. Nobody cares how tall I am. And that's the same way for everybody. If you are born with certain personality traits, certain strengths and certain weaknesses, sometimes we just have to cope with the situation and do the best. But your mother's lied. You cannot be anything. That is actually not true. I'm very sorry to break it to you, but it's not true. You can be a lot more than you might think, but you can't be anything. Nobody can be good at anything. I don't believe in that at all. What do you think?
I don't know. I suppose it comes down to the nature v nurture question. So I guess I'm going to point it back at you, is how this kind of mechanism of color, which is obviously just a metaphor for the personality types we're talking about here, how the kind of development of personality types occur. Of course, there's both an element of nature and nurture, but I feel, for example, somebody could start life very introverted and then become very extroverted. And so I guess my question sort of is whether people stay tethered to these personality types and manage to develop a capacity to go across, or if really these fundamental changes can happen and we can really fundamentally change our personality type as a person as we get older, develop and become more mature.
Right. That's an interesting angle, actually. And we have some research that gives you some intel about this. Actually, it's about when the frontal lobe closes. That happens. What that means cognitively is that now you can make decisions and understand the consequences. That happens at the age of 23, 24 when it comes to young men. It happens around 18, 19 when it comes to young women. Why did nature do this to us? I have no idea. You have to blame somebody else for that. But the thing is, that's why it's so expensive for young guys to get an insurance for the motorcycle, because we crash too much. I did that when I was a young man, actually. But the point is this, when the frontal lobe closes, your personality gets to be more fixed, let's say, which means that you freeze a little bit more. Now it's going to be harder to change who you are. Obviously, you can still develop yourself and you can work on who you are and you can learn more things and you can sort of look into the depths of your own character and all of these things. And you can teach yourself and train yourself in certain directions. But your personality will be more fixed after that age. Will I be the same person when I'm 80 as I was when I was 30? Probably, mostly. But of course, I will also be changed by my experiences, by, horrible events in my life and happy stories that have come along and good people that I got to know and fantastic, experiences and all of that. But personality-wise, I will probably still be, in my case, mostly task-oriented, mostly red and blue with some yellow in me and no green whatsoever. So that's the answer to the next question, to that question. But what people's personalities can change if they suffer from really tough traumas, let's say. Near-death experiences, if you lose a child, if you burned out, you get so stressed, you can't breathe, or, you get some rash or something really, really horrible, you can't work for a year or so. That can actually change your personality. It can do that, but that's quite usually stress-related diseases can change you. I've mentored an entrepreneur, just an example, who was super red, running several businesses and building a house and three toddlers at the same time, working 20 hours per day and something like that. And he just crashed and burned and he came out green after they put him in a respiratory medical care because he couldn't breathe normally. His brain just shut down the systems one after another. He woke up blind one morning. He tried to make phone calls and sort of arrange the office without seeing the you know, how to, completely crazy. He turned from red to green, but that's an extreme, I would say. But it could happen. It could actually happen. But generally speaking, you will be sort of the same personality, but you can learn other behaviors along the way. I mean, the personality is what's beneath the surface, and the behaviors is what we can see, what we can observe with our eyes, with our ears. But the personality is there. And sometimes you go against your own personality. If you're an extrovert and you're trying to pay attention, you have to just keep your mouth shut. Well, that's not an extrovert trait, but you know it's smart to be silent now. So you adapt to a certain situation, but if you have to violate who you are for too long, you're going to feel bad about yourself. You're going to be really stressed about that. So I usually recommend people not to violate who they are. Accept your personality and make the best out of it. Accept who you are. Don't try to be somebody else.
If you mentioned this about who you are, I saw that in, I think it was your latest book, Surrounded by Vampires. And I'm curious because I have had the idea in the past, and I've actually debated this with Ollie after many... Ollie and I have been friends for 3 years, and there have been situations in our life where we've kind of discussed bad actions and what makes a bad person or a good person. And I remember I once told Ollie that I don't necessarily believe in a deep core or a deep truth, and that a person is nothing except what they do. And I was wondering to what extent you might agree with that, and to what extent you might distinguish between a personality and behavior, or if they're actually just the same thing.
Well, to answer your last question, personality and behaviors are not the same thing. As I said just now, behaviors is what you try to, what you observe, and the personality was you try to figure out while observing the behaviors. I mean, if I give a lecture in front of, I don't know, 2,000 people, regardless of who they are sitting there in the audience, they are doing the same thing. They are hopefully quiet, paying attention to me, follow what I'm doing, what I'm showing on the screen, and they are sort of acting with me. And if we have a Q&A afterwards, the mic is going around in you know, from person to person. But they are actually using green behavior. So just me by standing on the stage and waving my arms and trying to look smart, I have changed their behavior into green behavior, which is paying attention and not talking, but listening very, very, very carefully to what has been said. So I have changed their behavior, but I have not changed their personalities, because in the first break, they will go out and have a beer and chat with everybody else and just be themselves. There is a huge difference between these two things. And I'm not a psychologist. I'm a behaviorist, which is kind of a different thing. So I study behaviors. Is there an inner core? Well, that's more of a philosophical question. Do you have a soul? Who are you? If we sort of connect you to a computer and sort of read your mind, what will we find? Will we see that Lucas, he is just, you know, he's just Lucas. It's just some sort of, you know, very, very, I don't know, superficial, some very, I don't know, not very deep individual. There's nothing beneath it. I don't believe that. I think there is a lot of things within you that you don't know. There's a lot of things within me that I don't know. I've been studying myself for 30 years, 35 years or something, and I still learn things about me. I think it's rooted in my personality. I learn more about my motivators, what makes me going. I think I learn more about why I react negatively to certain behaviors from other people. Why does certain people still make me quite frustrated, actually, when I hear certain phrases said? It really irritates me. And why is that? Where does it come from? I don't know if that's interesting, but I learn more about me the more I study myself. Do I believe that I have a soul within me, something very deep, something fundamental, something almost, I don't know, religious? I'm not a religious man, but I think there is something within us that we can spend our entire life in investigating, looking into. I don't have a language for it, really, but I think there is so much hidden beneath the surface, you know. There are things that you know about you and that I know about you. There's things that you know about you, but I don't know. There's things that I know about you, but you don't know about you. And there's things that neither you or I know about you. And the fourth and the last thing there is what interests me. What is hidden beneath the surface? What could it be?
Yeah, I find this just like exactly on that point of what's kind of a little bit deeper. I find interesting the distinction you kind of just made between you being a behaviorist versus a psychologist, because for me, from what I understand, the colors are very much kind of what underlie and drive the behavior, kind of that base kind of brain mechanism. And a behaviorist, at least maybe from my understanding, would focus more on the behaviors themselves. So with the color theory, where does the substantive evidence come for these personalities? Is it more from the behaviors themselves, or is it kind of more from an analysis of, for example, brain pattern, or I don't know, where is the focus there when you're looking at analyzing a personality type?
It's based on psychology. I mean, this goes back to Carl Jung. And then you have William Walter Marston, who sort of laid the foundation for what we now call the DISC analysis, the DISC assessment. The first vector analysis was made by Arthur Clarke, mid-50s something. The interesting thing when it comes to the DISC profile, and some people criticize it, and I understand completely why, it has been developed within the corporate world, so we don't have all the secrets. It's not laid out there. It's like with Myers-Briggs. We don't know exactly how these algorithms and measures behaviors work. It's a bit different when it comes to the Big Five theory, let's say, because it's nobody owns the Big Five theory. It's just based on psychological studies, research, let's say. None of these tools explains everything. All of them explain something, but they are not complete. But for me, that's not a problem. I'm more into using an assessment tool that works than using a tool that is 100% precise. Because those tools are usually so complicated, so I wouldn't reach this audience if I tried to, you know, explain everything about the human brain. I don't think anyone can do that. I don't think anyone understands the human mind 100%. We learn as we go. You mentioned neuroscience. I think the neuroscientists, neurobiologists, maybe they will figure out what psychologists have been trying to figure out the last 130 years, because they can actually measure brain patterns and so on. It's really interesting to see what happens there and where the blood flows go and so on, what happens in the frontal lobe and your amygdala. You can measure psychopathy these days by, you know, checking the amygdala, because you know what regulates flight and fright and other things as well, but among some things. So you can actually see from a brain scan who is a psychopath and who isn't. But still, maybe the human brain is the most complicated organ on the planet. Maybe, possibly. I would vote for that if somebody would put a gun to my head. I would say that's probably the most complicated organ we know about. But we are learning more as we go. Every year, new research comes and new development processes and new method. And it's super interesting. But still, you have to explain it in a useful manner. And back to your question, Lucas, why would anyone want to read about it? Well, if you can put it in a context, this is useful. I can use this in my daily life. That's interesting. You know, I don't have to go to Harvard or anywhere. I can actually read a couple of books and learn a lot about myself. That's fascinating.
Mm. So I guess you've kind of already answered it to an extent. But then what's the specific reason you've chosen, I suppose, DISC analysis as opposed to the other one you mentioned, which I think is Big Five analysis? Is it purely practicality, or do you think there's an element of precision or something else that's different about the way that the approach that you've chosen through which to describe psychology to people?
Well, there are some incidents in my previous life, let's call them, that put me on this very specific track. I am also licensed when it comes to MBTI or Myers-Briggs. I found that people don't remember the letters, you know, MBTI, ENTJ, ITPK, ENFJ, you know, DEIA, as in, you know, did I eat that? People just don't remember. Some do. The blue people do, and some, most people don't. But they remember their colors. I would say these assessments are comparable. MBTI is 16 personalities. They call it personalities. This doesn't talk about personality really, which I think is more of an honest approach. But again, I haven't invented this. I just put it in the book. So what do I know, really? But you can combine the four colors algorithmically speaking, 19,468 ways, I think. So that's a lot of combos there. The big five theory is probably more precise, but it's also much, much trickier. And people using the big five theory, they say it describes personalities. It has an extra layer. And other people say you can't use five factors. You need to use six. You have this hexagon method. No, 6 is too little. You need to 10 measurements. You have to, you know, and so who knows? I'm not a professor. I don't write essays for people from universities. I try to reach, you know, just the average guy. And if I can make people curious and they pick up another book and go to another lecture, I'm a happy guy. That's my aim, to make people curious and to lure them into the topic in itself, to explore themselves, let's say. That's my aim, and I think that's a good way to start.
Yeah, what you picked up on, which I think is definitely important, is that not one, and you write that in your book actually, Surrounded by Idiots, there's no one method which is perfect. Right. And I think this links to something else which you write in your book, which is that there are variations in culture and in gender. And you kind of preface that at the beginning of Surrounded by Idiots. And you say, look, I've only got this much space, or I need to focus on this thing. I can't go into all the differences amongst different cultures or amongst men and women. But just to put you on the spot here, well, what do you think the differences are in between cultures and genders, and how wide do you think the differences might be between a male blue and a female blue?
Well, this can get very messy very quickly, as we all know. But let's stay on the safe side a little bit and say that men and women are mostly the same when it comes to personalities and behaviors and characteristics. I mean, if you look at the distribution curve, the overlap, I mean, 60-40, we are mostly the same, but there are differences. And any system that measures personalities or behaviors worth its name says the same thing. Men are a little bit more task-oriented. Women are a little bit more relation-oriented. I don't know why that is. Nobody can explain why that is. Maybe Mother Nature or our creator or whatever theory you believe in made us that way. I don't know, but all the tools says the same thing. It doesn't really matter if you don't like that explanation. It's like saying men have a higher proclivity for violence than women have. It's not the same thing as saying women can't be violent, because some of them are, absolutely. Usually people say that's about testosterone, and if you look at the end of the curve, the most violent people on the planet are all men. It's just the way it is. Why is that? I don't know. Why did evolution make it that way? Is it about, I don't know, go hunting in the woods and women are there to take care of the children? I really don't know. I haven't looked into why that is. But I can say that is the difference. When it comes to we also have cultural things that actually, let's say, some cultures emphasize certain behaviors, and if you find more men in that corner, you will hire more men. Let's say, why are there more male engineers? Well, there are more blue men than there are blue women. I'm not talking about skills or competence or experiences. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm only talking about behaviors measured with the four colors, which gives you a bigger recruitment base when it comes to men, if you want a blue engineer. But this is just an example. We know there are excellent women that are into engineering, and they are creating incredible things. So we know this. And we know men are also, let's say, professionals. They are very successful within traditional female occupations. We know this. So we have a culture of things to deal with. But when it comes to what we can measure psychologically, and physiologically and biologically, even though it's unpopular sometimes. There are some differences, but again, the similarities are bigger. They absolutely are. So I would focus on those, definitely so. But it's really tricky to say. And different parts of the world, you know, if you go to the far East Asia, introverted behaviors are more accepted because you should be more quiet. You know, Confucius talked about silence, you know, he talked about being quiet, talked about active listening and so on. In our part of the world, it's noisier, it's more extrovert behavior gets more acknowledged, I would say. But it changes. When I was a young boy in school, you know, when I was in fourth grade, fifth grade, all the teachers promoted introvert behavior. The whole school system, sit down, be quiet, pay attention, listen carefully, and do as you're told, which is perfect if you're an introvert. These days, my kids, when they went to school, it had totally shifted. So now it's all extrovert. The teacher said, you have to work in teams, you have to cooperate, you should present yourself, you should talk about, you know, who you are and show yourself, present yourself to the room and take some space, you know, which is excellent if you're an extrovert. But now the introvert kids feel really bad. So, you know, it's really silly. What about finding a balance in, from between these two worlds, let's say? What about letting the introvert kids learn in their manner and the extroverted kids learn in their manner? Why is this why this change? I don't know. I don't know. But I can see the shift has been there. So maybe it goes back again.
You mentioned how, for example, imagine women are maybe traditionally seen as more empathic. But you also mention in the book how different colors have different strengths and weaknesses. My point is, do you think that it's, for example, better to be empathic overall? Do you think that some traits are simply better? Because this was something that maybe confused me a little bit, in that some colors, for example, red, just seem a little bit worse than others. Or do you think all colors are just on the same level?
Worst, as in, what do you mean worse?
Well, for example, I feel like the aggressive nature of a red person might be less conducive to a healthy society.
Ah. Well, back to the gearbox in your car. Sometimes you need somebody who points with his full hand and says, this is the way to go. This is the way to do it. If you talk about we need strong leaders, so then you have to have red behavior. If you need somebody to sit down and pay attention to details and to listen thoroughly to your inner feelings and your inner thoughts, then the red person is not your guy or your girl. Then you need somebody else. You need some green person, perhaps, or maybe some blue person. It depends on the situation. And that's what I meant just, you know, a couple of minutes ago when Ollie asked about, are all behaviors equally good? But it depends. The context matters. You have to have a red person in the right context. The red behavior take Sweden as an example. In Sweden, red behavior is not accepted very much because it goes against our culture a little bit. Swedish culture, you know, if you go back in time, if you talk about Swedish culture, you would say we are very, very caring. We are taking care of each other. We like to help each other out, but we are kind of conflict avert. We don't like quarreling. We don't like raised voice, you know, and fists in the air. We don't like people swearing too much publicly. If someone does something really stupid in the restaurant, we will all be looking away. We will say, hey, could you please stop that? We wouldn't do that. And red people, they don't care about these things. Red behaviors are not very, let's say, it's not accepted the same way as, let's say, a blue or a green behavior is in Sweden. In other places in the world, it's completely different. Then you have to act red just to make yourself heard. If you don't raise your voice, nobody's paying attention to you. Who's right and who's wrong? I don't know. These are cultural differences. And that's why it's so tricky to combine different cultures sometimes, because you have a certain... We are prolonged to act in a certain way because we're used to it. And these things can clash quite hard when you put two big differences together in the same room. It's like putting a blue person and a yellow person in a room. They are quite the opposite. They have absolutely nothing in common. and you can just shut the door and say, "Now, now you work it out. You solve the problem." One is starting to take in notes, and one we start to talk, and then forget about the whole thing. You know, they are not on the same planet. You need some sort of a balancing mechanism. Otherwise, it's going to be too tricky. And we still just talk about behaviors, right? We're not talking about personalities. We're not talking about psychological issues or histories or culture-based, you know, attitudes or fundamental values or those things. These things can be really, really complicated if you scratch the surface a little bit. But to say red behavior is bad, it is more aggressive than the other behaviors. That's true. Sometimes you need to show that you're serious. I'm not saying that you should shout and yell at people. That's not what I'm saying. But aggression, or let's say the being able to feel aggression within you, it's not always a bad thing. Because if you accept everything all the time, people are going to run you over. Sometimes you need to raise your hand and say, "Hey, you better stop that, buddy, because that's not okay. Don't do that, not once again, because then I will just, you have to leave. Don't do that, you know." And if you have to sort of, you know, boast yourself a little bit, well, why not? Sometimes if you show aggression all the time, that's a bad thing. The context matters quite a lot. You know that, but I would never say this color is better than the other color. I would never say that, even though I'm in my book, tries to make friends with everybody. I know I do that. Maybe I'm a bit of a coward there. I don't know. But I think all behaviors are good, but not everywhere. I'm lacking green behavior myself, which is very problematic for me. I am not born a good listener. So I'm struggling, but I can turn that knob on. I can just turn the switch on and say, okay, now I'm going to listen to you. But then it goes off again. So I have to pay attention to these things. But I know it. It's my self-awareness. This is my way of showing empathy. I think empathy and social skills are very, very connected to each other. Wouldn't you agree?
Definitely. As a slight aside, something that I find interesting is that given that these colors are linked, or personality types are linked to certain character traits, like we've just been discussing, for example, aggression in red, maybe passivity in green to a certain extent. I don't know how much research there might be on this topic, but something that interested me is that in the same way, a lot of personality disorders or neurodevelopmental disorders are linked to certain kinds of behaviors and ways of acting in a similar way to these personality types. So for example, narcissistic personality disorder kind of links up with what we might consider traditionally more red, or autism might link up with what we consider to be traditionally more green. And I was wondering whether you might know if these might actually be linked in some sort of important way, and that someone who's green, for example, is actually more likely to be autistic, or if those are coincidences and that the disorder distorts that person.
It's interesting that you gave those examples, but I will, in a very, hopefully very, very mild and friendly manner, try to correct you somewhat, if I may. I would connect autistic behavior with blue, actually. And I would also, because, you know, depends on where you are on the scale, because people who are very into details, you know, focused on small, tiny things, you know, and very, very, who can pay attention to and remember dates and numbers, that's more of the blue characteristics, actually. And sometimes people, again, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not an expert on the autism spectrum, I'm not an expert. I have written about psychopathy and narcissism quite a lot, and lectured upon it because I have experienced it in my family, in my life. I run into a couple of psychopaths, and so has my wife. But the thing is this, usually people blame red people for being narcissistic or psychopathic. That is usually what happens, actually. I wouldn't do that, because that's more about, I don't understand red behavior. How could you be so insensitive? I asked you, "What do you like my sweater?" You said you didn't like it. How could you be so mean? Well, you asked me if I liked it. Don't you want me to be honest? No, not really. Not really, you know. people used to say, yeah, you have to, honesty is anything, everything, you have to be honest, that's all that counts. We have to speak up, you know, freely, you have to dare to be honest. No problem, the red people says. Everybody else is struggling with this because honesty, ooh, that's painful. The truth hurts, you know. But the red people say, well, let's be honest then. I don't like you either, actually. And I think you have an ugly car and your kids aren't very pretty. What's wrong with you? You know, that's the red behavior. But as we don't understand red people, and red people are in minority, 9.5% of the population has mostly red in their personality profile, in their profile. Not only red, but red as the strongest factor. And the majority doesn't have any red. So therefore, they are a bit of a stray dog in this context. And people usually blame red people for being psychopathic or narcissistic. If you ask a red person who's the narcissist, who's trying to make friends, trying to sound terrific but never put in the work, that would be yellow, really. Or why not green? Because you said you were supposed to help me. You said yes, 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 but I know you meant no. Because you're so damn conflict-averse. You say yes to everybody. At the end of the day, you have to say no to someone, and that's a mistake, colossal, really, because you didn't dare to be honest. How psychopathic of you. So who knows? The answer to the question is, I just had to say these mm-hmm. things, sorry, because it's easy to be confused.
Mm-hmm, of course.
When it comes to these matters. But I would say this, I have not seen any research that proves any connection to any kind of personality disorders or mental disease spectrums of any kind connected to the colors or to MBTI or anything. I have not seen that. I have met psychopaths with red behavior. I have met yellow psychopaths. I have probably met a blue psychopath. I absolutely met more than one green narcissist, actually. Definitely so. Keyboard warriors, you know, who could be super, super nasty and mean and cruel online, but they wouldn't dare to face you, actually. That's a green behavior combined with the drive to put in people down, but they do it online because they don't have the guts to do it in your face. So I have met those as well, but I haven't seen any data that proves this. These are just tiny number of my own observations. I think the jury's out on this one, really.
Thank you. That was a helpful, I think, clarification, because you're right, it is quite complex. And obviously in an hour, it's hard to pass through all these different issues. Maybe to move it on to your latest book, because we've talked about Surrounded by Idiots a lot, but maybe not much about Surrounded by Vampires, which is basically about energy vampires, which are those who seem to drain everyone around them of all the energy, in your words. And in the book, you say that this energy vampire can be any color. Could you maybe expand a little bit on the different ways in which a negative trait might manifest differently depending on a person's color?
It could be the case. I mean, an energy vampire could be anyone. It depends on who you are. Again, what irritates you and drains you from energy maybe doesn't disturb me very much. So again, it depends on who you are. It could be the color. The red people will always be annoying to green people and vice versa. That's just the way it is. So that's a way to describe an energy vampire. If you sit in by your desk and you're working, you're feeling good about yourself, you think you're on track and you have some time left, you know, you're going to go to the gym, and then you see the door opens and you see that face and you go, oh no, not him, not her. This is not that, not today. Oh, please. And you just, that's your energy vampire. It could be a drama queen, someone who sails into the room and just, ha-ha, look at me, blah, blah, just steals your focus, steals your concentration, steals your work, perhaps. Why not? That could be your energy vampire. It could also be a passive-aggressive person who says things like, no, I'm not angry. Everything's just fine, you know. Very confusing, very confusing. Some people react a lot to that. It could also be control freaks. It could be people who can't leave anything, you know. They have to check you repeatedly and checking your Excel sheets and do it again and a third time and why not the fourth time, you know, checking. You know, they are never satisfied with anything. There are bullies. Could be bullies, you know. I see you're smiling there, Lucas.
No, it's just
touched a nerve there.
No, it's just funny because when you say all these different things, it's just I get different people popping up in my mind, and I think that's what also makes your work so popular.
Yeah, maybe so. The trick is, of course, to recognize why am I reacting to this individual? Can I do something about it? If I run into someone once in a while, maybe it's not a big deal. But if I frequently, on a weekly or maybe daily basis, run into somebody who steals my energy and makes me just worn out. Monday morning, you felt so good, and then here lunch comes, and who sits down at your table? Oh, no, not again. Why me, you know? Could be anyone. Then you have to find a strategy. And in the book, I talk about this. Sometimes you need to tell somebody, you know, when you act like this, it makes me feel like that. Please don't do that. Could you stop doing that? Because usually people don't know about it. Well, I thought we were friends. I thought you liked when I did this or that or talked about these things. Please don't bring up politics on a Saturday morning. Please. I don't need that this weekend. Could you please stop doing that? Oh, I'm so sorry. Now is when I had the time. Well, I'm not interested. Please stop talking about it. I don't want to hear about it, you know. It messes me up completely. We have to, again, communicate, because most energy vampires, it's interesting, in the States they say energy vampires, in the UK you say vampires, and you know what you're talking about. That was confusing for me, I didn't know that actually. Right?
Yeah, great. It's just vampires is the title.
Just vampires, exactly. So, but I'm a bit Americanized, as aren't we all in one way or another. But anyways, it's all about communication. You have to communicate. You have to bring it up with people. You have to talk, and you have to find that's what's in the book, to find a strategy, how to deal with a narcissist. Narcissists are super vampires. They steal everything deliberately. They know that they are stealing it, but they will never admit it if you confront them. So you need to find a strategy, and it's in the book for each and every of these types, let's say, because... We should preserve a strong inner energy level. Of course, we should do that. That's an open door, I guess. But it's so important to identify, why do I feel like this today? What happened? Who passed my door? What text from whom did I read that just made me go like this? I have to be observant what happens within me, and then I have to define, now I can see a pattern here. And then you are responsible for doing something about it. You can't change the other person, but you can change your approach to it. That would be my suggestion that you do, actually. And these are things that I talk to my wife about. Sometimes I annoy her, sometimes she annoys me, but we talk about how we talk. We communicate about our communication. It works like a charm if you actually are being honest about it. And she's one of the few people who are red, nothing but red.
Thank you.
Only red. 0.5% of the population has red and nothing else. It's like an L like this, you know, red, yellow, green, blue, nothing.
Yeah.
She's so fast. Jesus Christ, she's so fast. She's a force of nature.
Well, we'll put a link to...
you cannot imagine.
We'll put a link to Surrounded by Vampires in the description for those who want to learn more and read your latest book. But we'll also put a link to your upcoming book, Surrounded by Liars, which is coming out in October, I believe. Could you maybe advertise that a little bit for our listeners?
I would be most happy to. Well, Surrounded by Liars, suddenly the title is true, because everybody lies. Mm. Not all the time, not about everything, not in every context, and not to everybody, but everybody lies. Hopefully, We call it white lies. We can call it white lies. Sometimes we lie without having to actually produce any lies. Surrounded by liars is actually said, and I quote that in the book. I also say, I don't know where I've seen this, probably some sort of a psychological study. When two people meet for the first time, within 3 minutes, they both have lied five times, which is kind of crazy. Or was it 5 minutes and three times? Well, it's not good anyway. Everybody lies. And here I sort of dissect different kinds of lies, what it looks like in our society today, what it looks like within the media, on social media, and what happens with the fake news and you know, AI and everything. And I try to make it as contemporary as possible. That book was interesting to do the research for, but it's also quite disturbing, quite frightening to realize how easy it is to be untrue to people that you really care for. It made me think a lot and made me be even more open to my wife, Christina, who I love very dearly. We met late in life. I really, really care about her. I wouldn't want to lose her for the world, even though, you know, she's red. She knows it. She laughs at me and said, "You're so slow. I'm just so slow." So, and she looks at me and says, "So many words. Could you use fewer words? Would be good." And then we can laugh about that because that's kind of funny, don't you think? Yeah. But yeah, and it comes on late October, early November in the States. It's going to be published on the day of the presidential election. That's kind of funny, I think.
Ironic. Well,
see if I manage to get some media coverage over there. I don't know.
But we're looking forward to...
that's crazy.
We're looking forward to reading it. And we wanted to tell you thank you so much for joining us today from the Loaf podcast. Do you have maybe any closing thoughts for our listeners before we sign off?
I would say one thing. I touched upon it. One thing that I think is important, and that is that you cannot change somebody else. You cannot change somebody else, but you can change yourself if you want to. Just keep that in mind and things will be so much easier. So thank you, Lucas, and thank you all. It was a pleasure.
Hey guys, hope you enjoyed that interview with Thomas Erickson, the author of Surrounded by Idiots. If you'd like to check out a similar interview, you can click right here, where Loaf interviews Steven Pinker, cognitive psychologist. Please like and subscribe to keep supporting the channel and drop a comment with your thoughts down below. Thanks again for watching and see you next time.